We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Happy Friday. You are listening to The Spark. I am your host, Asia Tabb. We're kicking off the show with our Democracy Beat reporter, Jordan Wilkie, for our journalist roundtable today. It's also your first time on The Spark, so welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. So could you tell us a little about yourself and what brought you here to WITF?
Yeah, I came a little late to journalism. I'd worked another part of a career for the first half of my 20s, and I just saw that journalism was a way to hold people and systems accountable when there was wrongdoing, and that really fired me up. So I changed careers, got into journalism, got my master's down in North Carolina, and worked there for 5 years after I got my master's, and then just came up here. And WITF was on my radar because they have this accountability policy for lawmakers who tried to overturn the fairly elected, the fair outcome of the 2020 elections, and other lawmakers who, if they stopped short of trying to overturn the election, contributed to the confusion around the legitimacy of the results. And that was a really bold stance that I figured other newsrooms would also take, and they didn't. And so the courage of what it takes to do journalism in today's political environment really inspired me and made me look at the application pretty strongly and start a conversation with the editors here. And those conversations just went really well, and I thought, how could I not take this job?
Could you explain to us your coverage that you're doing here at WITF and what you're preparing to do for this November?
Yeah, I think when people hear democracy reporter and my role previously was elections reporter, they think, politics, politics, politics. And that's not what I do. I don't really have much interest in politics at all. What I'm interested in are elections and how elections are run. How people know when they go into the ballot booth and they fill in that little oval with their marker, how do they know that it then adds up to the numbers that they see on CNN or on NBC or whatever that night? How do they know that they can trust the process? And that question is really intriguing to me. And then the other part of that is, we live in a democracy, but what does that mean? What does the balance of powers mean? What does the health of our institutions mean? And how can we understand that in our day-to-day lives? So trying to figure out how to tell those stories are really compelling to me, way more compelling than, Senator whatever decries the latest, outrage from the other party. That stuff isn't particularly interesting to me. The actual mechanisms of how power is used to affect our lives is what I find compelling.
And that's interesting. You do a lot of research from what I can see on the other side of the WITF newsroom. Is there anything that you've discovered that's been about the election, how you're going about the coverage? Is there anything that stood out to you so far?
Stood out to me in terms of...
From the voting machine, how that works, election certification, political violence, healthy institutions.
Yeah. Well... I showed up here in February, not long before the April primary, and I'd been working in North Carolina and looking at their election systems, and I had this whole plan when I came here. It was all rah-rah-rah about what I was going to do for the primary election, and that sort of fell flat on its face because I learned very quickly that something's very different about Pennsylvania than North Carolina and a number of other states is Pennsylvania is super decentralized. Because it's Commonwealth, counties have a lot of power, and counties do various parts of the election administration differently county by county. And so suddenly it became very difficult to write stories like, you know, this next step is going to happen in election administration this week, and all counties are going to do it the same way. It required suddenly a whole bunch more research about how counties were actually going to carry out the system and make local decisions about how to do election administration. So I've been just wildly learning about the differences between counties and the different structures for how they make decisions related to their election boards and their election processes, and catching up on all the litigation that's been happening, because Pennsylvania's election code is I think 90 years old or close to at this point. And just, you know, a lot of the rules around elections in Pennsylvania aren't actually in election law. They're not in statute. They're in court decisions that have happened over the last umpteen years. And just learning that process has been really surprising and quite time consuming. But I feel much better prepared to cover all the ins and outs of election administration to help people understand why the system works the way it does going into the general.
And Jordan, you have machine guides for the local poll workers in the area. Why is it important for you to learn this information, and how something like a machine, like the voting machines, like how that works?
Yeah, the one you're looking at is the guide to teach poll workers how to turn on the Express Vote XL. And I believe that one's for Cumberland County.
Yes.
And those things are useful to me because, you know, especially in the political environment today, there's a lot of skepticism around how elections work and if they're working properly, if votes are accurately counted. And counties can use different systems. They all have to be certified by the state. And there's also a federal certification process they go through. But if I know how all these different systems work, when someone comes to me with a question, or oftentimes someone will email me and say, hey, I think this was a problem, this is what I experienced, I'll be much more prepared to say, oh, I think what happened was XYZ, let me go check the documentation and sort that out for you. And more often than not, people are like, oh, I didn't know that's how it worked. If it's not on election day, you know, if it's earlier than election day, something about mail voting, for example, they can go back to their election office more informed and then resolve that problem and get back to me. And that's talking with people who are having problems in the voting system is actually one of the main ways I learn. And being able to inform them and inform them accurately on a one-on-one way is super helpful for me. And it helps me pick which stories to write to inform people on a sort of a mass level.
And even with this machine guide that I have in my hand that you've been reading, it's so much more to it than just like the machine turning on and turning off. Like, what other information is in this guide that you've been reading on that's useful?
Oh, well, I mean, speaking more broadly than that specific guide, people have all kinds of questions when they go vote. You know, they say, you know, why is this county a touchscreen machine? Why is this county I hand fill out the paper ballot and then drop it in this scanner that drops into this box? What happens with the ballots once they're in the secure box? What happens to a provisional ballot? How is it organized? You know, how do I make sure that the votes were scanned accurately? And being able to tell people, you know, for example, like, what is a chain of command? When they take their ballot and they mark it and they put it in a scanner and the scanner drops the ballot into this box, how is that box then secured, transferred to the elections office securely, opened only when necessary to do things like do the audit, post-election audit, to make sure that the machines read the votes accurately? And then re-secured, you know, like, how do we know that none of the ballots were tampered with? And I can say, oh, well, here's this process. It's called a chain of custody process. And I can say, you know, in this county, it looks like it'll work like this because they have these machines and these processes. And in this other county, it looks like it'll work a little differently. So, you know, that's people. I mean, it's just all about telling people how the system works so that they can feel more confident or ask better questions of their elections offices.
Is this information accessible to us?
Yes. I mean, I haven't gotten – journalists are just members of the public. So as a journalist, I don't have special access to any information that other people don't have. So everything I look at is public record. But if you think about accessible in a different way, these are – oftentimes what I'm reading are, you know, research reports or relatively dense technical documents that aren't fun. You know, they're sort of hard to read and often hard to understand. And so that sort of is broadly one of the issues with election administration, is that it's at its best a boring administrative process with a lot of steps. And people don't want to learn, I mean, and justifiably so, they don't want to learn all of that until there's potentially a problem. And so my job is to learn as much as I can so that when individuals have a problem or when there's a broader problem, I can then respond to it as fast as possible, as with as much information as possible, much as context as possible. Because, you know, I wouldn't want on deadline to be trying to read, you know, these kinds of documents and understand them on a fast turnaround. You know, it's just, it's just a real risk of making mistakes and actually worsening some confusion.
Jordan, we also, you've been also reading on the role of election certification. What is that?
Yeah, so I think this is one major thing that elections officials and journalists have really been trying to emphasize in the last couple election rounds of elections, where elections are not official on election night. We've gotten used to watching TV on election night, and then the results will roll in, you know, late into the night, and the newsrooms will project winners and will say, all right, that's the election, that's done. But never in the history of the United States have votes been made official, elections been finalized on election night or the day after. It always takes a significant amount of time to go through all the documentation related to the election and make sure that it was run well, that you have all the ballots that you need to have, that you've voted, you counted everything accurately, counted all the votes accurately. And that whole process put together is called certification. And in Pennsylvania, that process takes at least 20 days. And there's a 20-day deadline for counties to certify the results that come from the ballots within their county. And then the state has some ambiguous amount of time afterward to then do a state certification. But that state certification usually happens pretty quickly once counties say, yes, this is accurate.
So you've been reading reports on voting machines and political violence. How are those two related?
Yeah, they're related in a couple ways. The first way is that I want to know how the system works so that I can explain to people how the system works. And the reason I want to do that is when people don't understand systems that have power over their lives, and, you know, when you think of the United States, you think of elections, you want the elections to work because you're electing the people who have power over your life. When people don't understand how elections work, they then start to distrust how the whole kit and caboodle operates. And when people distrust institutions, it can lead to destabilizing movements, and then those things can lead to political violence. Right. And so if people trust the process and trust the election process, that's really, you know, that's really key to democracy functioning. It needs to be seen as the will of the people. And, you know, maybe your candidate doesn't always win, but the process it took to put them in office was fair. And a big part of that process is just making sure that people are able to vote and that their votes are counted accurately and in full. So that's one tie, is sort of our hopes is that, you know, elections, not a lot of people understand how elections work. And if we can increase the number of people who understand how elections work, we'll be able to sort of cut down on some of the angst, confusion, anger around largely, almost exclusively false narratives that there are problems in elections administration. And I want to be clear that there are problems, and I've reported on problems. But there's a difference between, a human error that can be fixed because we have the ballots and can check the ballots and make sure that the ballots are counted accurately, and like some sort of conspiracy. So when I report on problems in election administration, it's like, you know, someone isn't filling out forms properly is much more akin to an issue than, you know, like there's some sort of conspiracy, which I myself have never had the opportunity to uncover, though I'm constantly looking. The other way that election machines are related to political violence is similarly, you know, when people see a system that's hard to understand, it's really easy to lie about that system, right? It's easy to push falsehoods about that system, to see doubt. And so the more that we can cover how election administration works, the more we can create a record of how election administration works. Our hope is that it makes it harder for people with power to then lie about how the system works. And when people in power are then taken, the ability for them to lie about how elections work is taken away from them, then the power of that lie is also reduced. And therefore, when people in power make those lies, make those falsehoods, push narratives that, for example, elections aren't secure, you shouldn't trust them, when that narrative is undercut, then people are less likely to be driven to the political violence that is seeded by, like, hey, the system isn't fair and I'm not represented. It's like, you know, we looked at the numbers, we looked at the data, I read the reports, I've talked to election officials, I've done public records requests, I've gone and I've watched processes for, you know, logic and accuracy testing, I've seen how they sort mail ballots, I've looked at all this stuff. You know, we've made databases out of the voter registration records and the mail returns. Like, we've done all of this stuff, and we can say, yes, the system worked the way that it's supposed to work. And if you hear otherwise, there's no evidence for it. And we're not assuming that's going to be true, but that's why we're collecting all this information and learning the processes now, so we can show that elections are actually run the way they're supposed to be run. And if they're not, we're sure as heck going to report on it. But, you know, the way I sort of approach it is, you know, you shouldn't have to trust that an election outcome is accurate. You should be able to be shown and be able to see the data. And that's one of the things that we're trying to show. And in order to do that, you need to know the system like the back of your hand.
How does all of this impact your coverage moving into November?
Yeah, so one of the things that I really like about WITF is the editors here are ready to make a plan.
Yeah, so
and
true.
I've been at previous newsrooms where, you know, it's the end of September, getting into October, and the editors are like, hey, you know, like, we should really get ready for this election thing. And I've been, you know, with my hair on fire for a couple months being like, we should really get ready, you know. And here, we were planning for the general election at the same time as I was learning how to cover the primary. We were using the primary as a learning opportunity to figure out our coverage for the fall. And so we're still creating that plan, but, you know, light years ahead of where I've ever been in another organization. And the planning and the thoughtfulness that goes into it here is just incredible. So I hope to be able to come back on the show and lay out our whole strategy once we have it nailed down. But I can tell you for certain that we're going to be talking to a lot of voters and hearing their concerns, and that we're going to be doing a lot of stories covering how elections work, because just that baseline knowledge is so important to understand everything else.
Wow. And is there anything else that you're researching in the near future that you haven't touched yet that you're excited to read on?
In terms of reporting, yes.
Because you're always reading, which is great. It's so good.
Yeah. In terms of reporting, yes, there are a couple things that I'm very excited about, but we are not yet at the place where we can reveal some of our reporting.
Can't give us like a...
No. Yeah. Who knows who's listening? But yeah. Constantly putting in records requests, constantly learning new things about our legislators and about our various systems. And you know, there's something I'm reporting on right now, which is, you know, not super exciting, but for nerds like me, it is actually pretty exciting. The state is going to update its entire data management system around elections. It's going to take a few years. They had started this process previously, and then the relationship with the vendor fell through, and so they're restarting the process. But our current system that manages every single voter registration in the state came from technology around 2002. So you know, it's about time to replace that. And how that's going to work is going to be pretty fun to watch if you're really into the weeds like I am. But I'll try to make it fun for everyone else who's not.
We trust you.
Yeah.
Jordan, you also have like a list of the 2024 Pennsylvania elections important dates to remember. Tell us about this, because this is a really thick packet.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, that comes from the Department of State. And they lay out, you know, all the different administrative steps it takes to run an election. You know, we think of election day, but it takes months and months to put an election together and then you know, some time after the election too, to certify and make sure everything's running smoothly. So that's just their list, and it's one of the ways I'm thinking about creating stories, both for accountability, making sure counties are doing the things they need to do on time and with the proper thoroughness, and also just for voter education. You know, on that list you see things like this is the first day that counties are going to start processing and then returning ballots for like mail-in requests, right? Mail-in ballot requests. And then there's other things, you know, like this is the registration deadline. We want to look at that, and we want to tell people well ahead of the registration deadline, like, hey, if you want to participate in your democracy, you know, here's the deadline. We want to tell them that way ahead of time. We want to tell them that just ahead of time. We want to tell them that on the day of. And so, yeah, that's how we're using that to create some really baseline coverage for the fall.
Well, thank you so much, Jordan, for joining us today. We're so excited about your coverage and what you're going to do moving forward here at WITF. I'm Asia Tabb, and thanks so much for listening to The Spark.